My name's Davis Vaughn, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm introducing my friend Dan. He introduced me to tell my story at this meeting a couple of years ago. And I actually think I introduced you to tell your story here a couple of years ago, too. And since then, not much has changed. I met Dan 6 years ago, and or seven. And we found that we were the flip side of the same coin. And I am profoundly grateful to have you in my life. It's I would not be sober today. And I take a lot of... I really relate in the big book where it talks about Bill and Abby sitting down at that kitchen table and having just this kind of intimate conversation, and something sprung from that. And I really think that when two alcoholics get together and they're sincere and they speak together, every conversation we share has that same potential, and I've witnessed that potential unfold in his life and my life in just a wonderful way that I am very grateful for. So I'm proud of you, and enjoy. I'm Faith Olson.
I'm Dan. I'm an alcoholic.
Dan.
So on the way here, I was very nervous, and then it dawned on me that I've been talking about nothing but myself for the last 6 months, so what's another hour? I'll start from the beginning. I was conceived approximately 9 months before I was born here in Atlanta, Georgia. I grew up in a town called Roswell, and then subsequently moved to Alpharetta. As it pertains to alcoholism, one of the things that sticks out to me in terms of my inner workings from a very, very small age is that I was constantly anxious and constantly had sort of a discontentedness with being in my own skin in general. And what that looked like was, you know, a childhood just filled with different issues, problems, gripes from different people. My parents got divorced when I was six, and so I never really have a memory of my mom and dad living together. But what I do remember is that when they split, what happened was my brother and I would move back and forth between my mom's and my dad's houses growing up. So it would be a week with mom, a week with dad. And my parents are pretty much as close to polar opposite as you could be. So what that kind of instilled in me from a young age was how to assess the situation that I'm in and take advantage of it based on my surroundings and based on what I knew I had to do in order to get what I wanted. So with my mom, I figured out a game plan for her. With my dad, I figured out a game plan from him. And what that kind of looked like was me never really having a solid core of an identity and just being absolutely a different person, you know, putting on a different mask for whoever I was around and whoever I was present with. And so my mom was absolutely as unalcoholic as one could possibly be, very calm, very grounded, very nice, but very fucking anxious. And so she was always up our asses when we were kids, like really driving home the perfectionism, the, you know, pick yourself up and do it if you fall down, and just really no room for a lot of mercy. And then my dad took that and amplified it to a power of 20, and he is an alcoholic as well. And so during my childhood, I would remember him not showing up for days at a time. And when he did show up, he would be either shit-faced or hungover and pissed off. So either way, what I had to do was learn how to navigate someone else's mood, someone else's disposition, and someone else's life before my own. Because if we did anything the wrong way, that was a recipe for him to set off. And so growing up, and like this is all, I've been sober for almost 5 years now, and like this is all beginning to kind of unfold in my mind to a deeper degree than when I first came in here. You know, when I first came in here, it was just, how do I get all this shit out of my life? And I didn't really care what I looked like as a person in terms of character. I just wanted to be, I wanted my ass to stop being kicked by substances. And now when I look back at it, it's like I can see that like some of these patterns and some of these things which were very much accelerated and exacerbated by using drugs and alcohol kind of started from a very early age. And so with my dad, like living with someone that was actively alcoholic, and to give you an example of what his time in the program looked like, he told me once when he was about 8 years sober that I was like, Dad, have you done any amends? And he was like, my amends to those assholes is not beating the shit out of them. So I was like, okay, sounds fair, but like clearly that's not, if you've worked the steps, like how you're supposed to think about it. But so then like looking back at it, what I was dealing with is like someone that was either actively using or someone that was dry as fuck and white knuckling it and really pissed off at the world. And so me and my brother got the brunt of that. And what that kind of turned into was me looking, you know, from a young age for a avenue of escape. I would say my first, what was it? Okay, so my first avenue of escape was when my parents got divorced. I began like really acting out with my little brother. I began just like doing some fucked up shit to him. You know, just chasing him around, beating the shit out of him, feeding him dog food, telling him poison ivy was magical so he would rub it on his face and break out, like really fucked up shit. And that got me in a lot of trouble with my family. And I remember when we started getting closer, me and him would go outside, and we had a tree that we would go and just bawl crying together because neither of us could really tolerate what was going on with our family situation. And so that was, so from a very early age, I was noticing that like things were, life is unmanageable. Shit happens that you can't control. And from like ground zero, I had no formula for coping with it. It would involve, you know, acting out and misbehaving, hiding in my room, running away, like anything I could do to get out of the situation I was in because I didn't know how to cope with it. And so that turned into a very aggressive video game addiction when I was like 13 or 14. I would play this one game called Tribes, and I would play it for like 14 hours a day during summer. I would scream and freak out at my mom if she didn't get our internet upgraded. If she tried to pull the plug on it, I would like lose my shit. And it reminds me of what I would do if the dope man didn't answer, or if the liquor store was closed on Sunday when that was a thing. And so I saw like from a very early age, like if I did not get my escape, like something snapped in my head and I was off. Then that gradually through high school got transferred into sports. So I played baseball, ran track, and ran cross country in high school. And to give you an example of how I did that, me and one of my closest friends in high school thought it would be a great idea to see if we could run 1,000 miles during one summer break. So that was like 2.5 months. So me and this kid would wake up at like 5:30 in the morning, run like 12 miles, go home, eat, go out when it got a little cooler outside, maybe like 6-7 o'clock, and run another 8 miles, run another 9 miles. And so like, there was nothing in my life, there was no activity that didn't come without an egregious amount of addiction, is what I'm trying to say. And so, like, after that, I went to college at UGA. I got several scholarship offers from, like, D2, D3 schools for running and chose not to take them in order to attend the mothership up in Athens, Georgia. And I got there. For the first semester I was there, I lived in Creswell, if anyone's familiar with Athens, Georgia, on the 9th floor. That happened to be High Times Magazine number one dorm hallway in the country for getting fucked up. And so I stepped in, and this was probably the first time that my dad and mom had, like, been together in the same room for a little bit. And my dad's advice to me when I got off is no pregnant and no drugs. You know it's gone. He said, no pregnant and no drugs, and don't put your mouth on it. Don't put your dick in anything you want to put your mouth on. Have fun in college. And then left. And my mom flipped out and was like, that son of a bitch. Like, fuck him. That's why I divorced him. I was like, okay, see you, Mom. And so then they were both gone, and there I was. I had delusions of running track for UGA. So for the first semester, and by the way, I was a reasonable late bloomer with alcohol. I drank my first time, when I was probably 8 years old. I had a beer at a Georgia game, but I don't really count that. The first time I got shit-faced was when I was 15 at a house party in high school, and I was so obsessed and driven by sports at that point in my life that I really, you know, I would drink, and I would get shit-faced and blackout when I did, but it would be twice a month, three times a month. And so, like, as far as substances were concerned, I was hyper-vigilant about running and baseball in high school and just hung out with people that were more of the nerd variety. And so I just didn't happen to fall into it really hard when I was in high school. College is a different story. So for the first semester I was there, I was convinced that I was going to be a UGA track athlete. I was running my ass off. I was eating four meals a day. I was doing everything that life entails. And then I ran a time trial with the team and ran a 15-minute 5K and got lapped. So I was like, this dream's done. And so I got second to last place out of everyone. An Ethiopian guy smoked my ass by a lap and ran like a 13-minute something 5K. And so I was just like, all right, now that sports are pulled out, you know, what's the next logical solution to insert? And I found it to be drugs and alcohol. So the first time, and I had been drinking this semester, and it was progressively getting worse and worse, but I was still so driven by this sports idea that, you know, I managed it well, or so I thought. And then on Halloween of my first semester in college, a guy that lived in my dorm hallway came over and asked me if I wanted to try some mushrooms. Because at the time, I was still convinced that smoking anything was a bad idea because I was a runner. And so people had offered me weed, I'd said no. Cigarettes, I'd said no. And then this guy was like, you want some mushrooms? I was like, I don't know what that is, but yeah. So I ate a whole bag and had a very, very spiritual experience. Got the shit scared out of me. And I was convinced that, like, what that did to me was being high, since that was the first time. And so that kind of freaked me out. I cooled it and just drank heavily, and progressively that semester. And then winter came, and the girl that I had been seeing in high school, we had tried to keep a relationship intact with her being a senior and me being a freshman, and it was getting very, very rocky. And so that winter, we ended up cutting ties, and I did not take it very well. So what did I do? I walked back up to my dorm room and said, knock, knock, what do you got? I'll take it. And so for the second semester I was at Georgia, I was doing a consistent amount of ecstasy, Xanax, cocaine, just anything I could get my hands on that was supplied through this dorm room. I mean, it was insane. Like, you go to one neighbor, he has this guy has that, this guy has that. And so, like, all it would take is me just getting up in the morning and walking door to door and kind of getting whatever I wanted. And so, like, this kind of steadily progressed. And then my dad had given me one rule when I went to college, which was you either keep the Hope Scholarship and I will pay you in cash half of what it gives you after every semester, or you don't keep the Hope Scholarship and your ass is coming home. So that required a 3.0 when I was there. And so what that did was plant the idea in my mind that, like, no matter what I'm doing and no matter how fucked up I am internally, if I'm okay on paper, that's what counts. That's what the world looks at, and that's what I need to be focused on. And so what that ended up looking like was getting into a lot of Adderall, a lot of Coke, and a lot of Concerta and any other stimulant I could find in order to knock the grades out that I needed to be knocking out, you know, in order to appease my father. And so this cycle happened just semester after semester. A pivotal moment came when I got introduced to painkillers. I remember eating them when I was a teenager and had my wisdom teeth out. They gave me Percocets and Loratabs and all this other stuff. And so I remember eating them and noticing, you know, the feeling that alcohol gave me. The instant relief from all of the broken record, cyclical, crazy circus in my mind was a different and more advanced shutting of that up with painkillers. So that's where I found my drug of choice, if you fast forward. What alcohol did for me, I remember, was just providing instant relief and a deadening of the process in my mind that kept me, like, just constitutionally anxious and frayed and disjointed and aggressively worried about everything in the world. It silenced that. Then I found painkillers, and it not only silenced that, but it provided me a nice coat of armor that I could take out into the world and be who I thought I could be. You know, be the confident dude, be the smartest guy in the room, be this, be that, be the other. And I had zero self-confidence when I went to college, and then I added on painkillers, and it was a complete role reversal, and I became Superman, you know? And, like, I began taking Percocets on a daily basis, and then I began getting into OxyContin. And then you fast forward, and this was all in a progression through my college years to where I could reasonably say that I experimented for about a year, and then towards the end of my third year, I was doing OxyContin, drinking heroin occasionally, and Xanax, other stuff on a daily basis, but I was still at the point at that time to where I could conceivably convince myself that, like, hey, I'm still making straight A's, so, like, everything's good. I had a job tutoring people. So what would I do? I would just go to the bathroom, rip a huge line up my nose, come in with an accounting tutorial, and base all of my examples on dealing drugs and teach college kids how to do accounting. And so, like, that was the level of insanity that I was living for quite some time, that's really started during my third year at school. My fourth year, I began... my habit began running away from me faster than I could control it. And what I mean by that is the Hope Scholarship checks, my tutoring money, my roommate's birthday card money I found in their drawers, and every other allowance and, you know, dollar bill I could get my hands on were no longer allowing me to get an ample supply of what I needed to be okay. And so what happens when that happens? Well, you start dealing the shit for a higher price than you buy it for. And so we found a couple of people in Athens that were, you know, veterans, disabled, had basically like 10 prescriptions for the same shit that they would sell to kids like me, and then I would go sell them to frat boys and whoever else had a lot of money that I could take. And so this kind of fueled my habit to a fashion that was really crazy, because I was doing all of this shit for free in my mind, still making good grades and still coming home to Thanksgiving dinner and smiling. And now that I see pictures of myself from this time, I'm like, holy shit. You know, I thought I was, like, locked down and had it good. And, you know, my poker face is on point. But, like, there were a couple of pictures I looked at with my mother months ago, and I was just, like, cross-eyed with turkey hanging out of my mouth, and I thought I had it together. And so, like, this point became, it became to get progressively worse and worse. Several things happened, different events, you know, getting stuck up at gunpoint, getting robbed, robbing people, stealing my mother's jewelry when I couldn't find the guy in order to sell it and, you know, get enough money to use again, and just starting to notice that, like, the totem pole of character that I had in my head was getting lower and lower to the ground, and I couldn't really stop. During this time, I had paired up with a woman that was hiding an aggressive Xanax addiction from me. I was hiding the same from her. We decide that, you know, we're both slick enough to take the world on by the horns and, you know, continue doing whatever we wanted to do. And so I got a job in the insurance world after college, and me and her moved up to Richmond, Virginia. I'll say by this point, I had either overdosed or had a heart attack 3 different times, once on campus in the SLC, the Student Learning Center, for those who, I think it's called something else now, but I was with a guy that I was tutoring, and he offered me a quarter of weed to help him learn accounting, and so I did that. But before I did that, I put way too much shit up my nose and drank way too much coffee and ended up waking up in the hospital. And this kid was by my side, took me home, and my parents never found out about it. And then that happened several times again, and one of those times happened to be a couple of days before I graduated. So when I got out of the hospital, I basically hid away in the girl I was seeing's apartment while my entire family went to Sanford Stadium to watch the graduation, and, you know, were texting me off the hook, and I was trying to be, yeah, I'm the one in red and black, like, yeah, there's too many people here, like, I'll have to meet up with you afterwards, and, you know, it was just ludicrous. Like, it was basically, like, I was living two completely separate lives, and I had always been used to that because, you know, 1 week with mom, 1 week with dad, and, like, I never stopped. But what I did notice was the consequences were progressively getting worse and worse. And not only the unmanageability on paper, but the unmanageability here. My ability to put my head on my pillow and go to sleep right when it hit was non-existent. I was an absolute train wreck, and I still held firm to the idea that, like, if I make these grades, life will be okay. You know, I might be a little out of control, but I can manage this. And then that all came crashing down when I moved to Virginia. So I got this job and, you know, moved to Richmond with this girl. We moved in together, and probably the second week that I was there, I was caught sleeping at my keyboard, drooling my ass off because I had just done way too much Xanax in the parking lot before I walked in, and my boss asked me to come to his office and was like, so I know you're right out of college and probably used to living a different way. Now that you're here and you just moved, you know, 400 miles away from your family, we'd appreciate it if you could shave that Taliban beard you're supporting and, you know, get enough sleep to be functional at work. And I was like, yeah, sure. The next time that happened was shortly thereafter. They fired me. Got into a huge blow up with the woman that I was seeing. We parted ways. I drove back to Georgia in a U-Haul alone, took all of my shit out, left it in Athens so she could take her shit out at a later time, and met my dad, and he was wise to the fact that something wasn't quite right, but I was a very good liar. And so I just told him that, you know, they had a it was in 2009, so the economy's fucked, and they had to lay someone off. I was just the smartest guy in the room. It was making them uncomfortable, and so they laid me off. You know, I don't know what I said, but it was something, like, fucked up and wrong. And so he bought it, and was like, you know, are you sure, you know, everything's okay? Yeah, yeah, Pops, I'm going to come back like Tim Tebow, and I'm going to fucking do this. And that, I remember that was the year that they lost to Ole Miss and then came back and won the national championship, even though I hate Florida. And so I was like, that's what I'm going to do, Pops. Like, I'm going to take this shit down. I'm going to get a great job, blah, blah, blah. So I had an interview at Lehman Brothers and was set to move to New York a few months before the company went bankrupt. So I dodged that bullet, because if I had been in New York City, I probably wouldn't have been alive to stand here and tell you the story tonight. But I dodged that bullet. I spent my entire severance package from my first job getting high for about 2 weeks. And then everything came to a head one day. And I pulled into my driveway. My dad lost his cool. Where the fuck have you been? Blah, blah, blah. And what I did was take a big puff of a cigarette and blow it directly into his face and say, fuck you. Then he jumped me like a tiger. And we proceeded to beating the shit out of each other in my driveway with my stepmom taking a broom and hitting me in the back of the head, screaming like a cat. And I stood up and said, fuck you both. He went over to my car. Took either mallet or an axe, opened it up, wham, right into the engine. Where are you going to go now? Where are you going to go now? I'll take your fucking car, old man. So I ran in the house, grabbed his keys, ripped his car out of the driveway, ran over all of our sprinkler heads, and flicked him off on the way, like, screeching down with, like, $15 in my wallet. I don't know what I was thinking. Like, I was not going to get very far. But sure enough, he, like, grabbed the truck and started chasing me. He floored it across our neighbor's yard to cut me off, slammed the e-brake as I was getting out of the neighborhood, ran over, punched the window in, and grabbed me. And so then out of the car I go, and now we're beating the shit out of each other again. And then we ended up just being soaked in blood and anguish and just had lost all of our dignities combined and just looking at each other. And I remember he looked at me and was like, your eyes look like a shark. Like, where the fuck did my son go? And then he just got in the car, drove away. And I remember that hurt. And so I was still way too arrogant and stubborn to let it hurt. So I called my friend and said, hey, can you pick me up? Ended up sneaking back into my father's house later, taking a bunch of his shit to sell and trying to live like that until I could find another job because I was of sound state of mind to start working again. And, I remember one day he asked me if we could go see my therapist. I was like, yeah. So we went. Long story short, on the way out, I agreed to take a drug test. We went to one place. They were all out of the tests that he wanted. And so then on the way to the second place, he pulled over into a parking lot and looked at me, and he was just like, you've always been afraid of me, and I want you to know, like, if you are doing something, and if there's a little king in your head that's dictating your every move and having you lie to me at every turn of the road, like, why don't you just surrender and let me try to get him? And I just broke. And I was like, here's what I've been doing. Take me to Ridgeview. And so I got to Ridgeview on October 9th of 2009. And I remember... So I was an arrogant, classy guy that had fancied myself as, you know, the next great entrepreneur, had a 3.9 GPA coming out of one of the hardest business schools in the country, and just thought that I had it together. And then my reality was is that I was in a padded cell with a schizophrenic gentleman that was accusing me of poisoning his food every 5 minutes, but I couldn't concentrate on that because my entire body felt like it was on fire from heroin and Oxycontin withdrawals for about 3 straight days. I stayed in Cottage C, for all of those who know, for about a week, And I remember feeling very incongruent with the picture I had of myself in my head versus being asked to remove my shoelaces before I went to bed so I could hang myself from the shower head, which was 20 feet in the air. I was just like, damn, if I really got it all together, then like, I wouldn't be sitting here eating peanut butter and Shasta Cola in the detox unit, like, with people afraid that I'm about to fucking hang myself. And so at that point, I was still fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting. And the first time my parents visited me, I was like, yeah, I concede that heroin was a bad idea, but I think I could just smoke weed and drink when I get out of here. They were like, yeah, you're staying. And then I, one thing, let me back up. So I was still fighting on the way in. I was signing myself into the admissions office with my dad sitting right next to me. And I stopped and looked at him and was like, I'm not really much of a talker. I don't think this is gonna, and I was about to say help, and he was like, shut the fuck up and sign the papers. And so, like, I'm glad that that happened. So, like, I basically, what I'm trying to say is I fought every single angle, every single corner, and just got pinned. I don't, like, Davis has said this before, like, I don't feel like I could have stopped if I wasn't literally stripped of my freedom, identity, cell phone, wallet, everything, because I was so fucking arrogant and thought that I had it so figured out. I was a big schemer. I knew exactly how I was going to bounce back. I just wanted to detox on dad's floor. I just wanted to do this. And, like, the fact that he, like, looked at me and said, sign the fucking papers, was the best thing that could have happened to me. I tried to scheme my way into getting some Subutex in the detox room, and the nurses basically told me to shut the fuck up. And so, like, every step of the way, I was trying to take the easier, softer way and have the force blunted a little bit and just, like, find some sort of balm for my, like, raging insanity, and no one was giving it to me. Which, in retrospect, was the best thing that could have happened. So I met a guy in Cottage C next to the little cigarette holes, because you can't be trusted with lighters. I met him, and I was like, yeah, so I'll probably stay here for like 3 days and go back to my life. He was like, yeah, me too. And then we both realized that they conned us into the young adult program for 6 to 8 weeks. We were like, yeah, well, after that, he's going to go back to Bama. I'm going to go back to wherever I was going. And then they conned us again into a three-quarter house. And at that three-quarter house is where I met Davis. And at that three-quarter house in Smyrna, all I did for about 6 months was jump off cliffs on the Chattahoochee, drink a lot of Red Bull, jerk off, and play Call of Duty. And so, like, it was exactly what I needed, with no one but other men that were in the exact same boat as me. Because I thought it was indicative of a huge pussy to talk about their feelings, especially with another dude. And at this point, there were like 9 straight months of small groups and big groups and individual sessions and processing and all of this shit that I never considered. And so, like, having a forum to speak to what was going on in me was one of the best things that could have ever happened to me, because I did not do that before. I would be so filled with anxiety in college that if I saw someone that I knew and I wasn't high, I would literally, like, make an angle to walk around them and avoid having to have a conversation. Like, that's how much constant anxiety I was in. I mean, this shit would have terrified me when I was 18. And so, like, getting used to being honest, being vulnerable, and disclosing pieces of myself, especially pieces that were in the shadows and under the rug that I didn't want to see or didn't want to speak to, telling someone about that and developing friendships like the ones I have today, you know, really saved my ass, because I got to see, like, you know, whereas I think the big book says it best, it's like, and then there's the type that seems reasonable in every aspect of their lives, but this one. And so my elephant in the room was substances, alcohol, I mean, everything that came with that. And it was just extremely difficult to go there with people because a part of me was aware of how insane I was. It was like part of me was witnessing the jaywalker, you know, in the book where it's like, okay, I just got hit by this bus, broke my arm. But why am I walking in the street again? Now I just broke my leg. You know, and so it was just a matter of time before I didn't wake up from one of these overdoses. And, like, I'm very blessed to be here today. And so, long story short, the three-quarter house ran me up until about 9 months. And then I got a job in the insurance industry and moved to Kansas City, Missouri. Had never been before I got in my car and left. But I was 10 months sober. And I got this. So I lived in a extended stay motel with a stray cat that I picked up on the road that wouldn't leave me alone. And was feeding this cat, living in an extended stay motel with a bunch of people that were like contractors and shit, like on their way from Oklahoma City to Chicago and just stopping for a few weeks and smoking a lot of meth and offering me a lot of shit. I was like, nah, man, I'm spiritual, and I would go by the pool, and for months I would read Eckhart Tolle and the Bhagavad Gita and the Quran and all of this stuff to, you know, really, like, solidify my sobriety. And then we were at the first work function outside of work for the company I was at. We went to a bowling alley, and the drink guy came by, and he was like, what do you want? Jack and Coke. Just jumped out of my mouth before I could even catch myself. I was like, that was odd, but I guess since I ordered it, I gotta drink it. So they brought it, I drank half of it, had a panic attack, went into the bathroom, threw it away, and then woke up the next day convincing myself that I didn't relapse because I was all alone in Kansas City. And so I was like, nah, suppressed. And for the next couple of months, it was smooth sailing. And then I went to a Halloween party in some bumblefuck city in Kansas and got shit-faced. And I was like, all right, I'm going to have to accept that one. called my parents, hey, I'm drinking again, but it's okay because I don't know anyone out here. I can't get, you know, this other shit. My mom was like, okay, honey, like, good luck at work. And my dad was like, you're so full of fucking shit. He was like, just try not to get fired for another 10 months and then come back and we'll do something about this. So that led to an egregious next 10 months in Kansas City of absolutely just being crippled by my own brain. You know, still seated very heavily in the arrogance that I had survived with up until that point. And what the end of it looked like was in Kansas City, since I'm from Atlanta and I had a two-wheel drive Mustang, snow was not my friend. So for 5 months, I was getting taxied from and to and from work with a bottle of liquor in my backpack, and then promptly from work to the riverboat casinos, where I would be throwing craps with all the people there and just getting shit-faced every single day. Then when the snow started piling up, this cat got cold, and so like literally the only thing that I was doing was drinking liquor, gambling, and like getting a taxi to Panera to buy the cat chicken noodle soup. Because like at this point, like my life was so fucked that I was like, all right, well, if I gotta go, at least this fucking cat is gonna be taken care of. And then it left. The cleaning lady left the door open one day. It escaped. And I came back and fucking broke. I was just like, God damn it. They're like, I have to be with myself now. Like, I can never sit with myself. And so, long story short, I came back to Georgia to work with this company. But before I left, they took a garbage can full of papers that I had hoarded and just threw away. I tend to stack a lot of papers up at my desk, and so like I got the wise idea that I would just like hide all of this evidence and then go back to Atlanta and no one would know. So I got confronted by like 12 very angry women that I was working with and basically like looked at all of them and told them to go fuck themselves and somehow didn't get fired because Atlanta was paying me. I came back, got straight back into opiates. It took zero time at all. I had a come to Jesus moment flying to Texas to visit a girl that I was involved with, and going through the airport in a shirt just like this, had about 40 Roxy's in this pocket, was walking up to the x-ray machine. Right when I was about to step in, it malfunctioned and broke. They wove me through just the rectangular metal detector, and in my mind I was like, God loves me. Like, I'm that fucking good. And then I did all of those the first day I was in Texas, and then called everyone that I knew when I started withdrawing. And it was just like, I'm in Houston, don't ask why. I called my dad and I was like, can you pick me up from the airport? Because I don't trust myself not to get more shit when I come back. He picked me up from the airport and his only comment was, you are so weak, get in the car. Then I went through three quarters again while I was working, did 90 and 90 while I was working, a crazy ass job. And at that point, wanted this thing like a drowning person wants air. And like that's always been the metric to measure by from what I've been told. And so like I absolutely wanted to get sober. I did not want to live that way. On paper, I had been arrested. I had been in trouble with everyone, you know, in the world. But the first time I didn't get it. The second time I had no bottom. I just woke up in Houston feeling dead on the inside. And getting into the first step where we, you know, admitted we were powerless over alcohol and our lives had become unmanageable, the unmanageable portion was always the hardest one for me to get because I was so slick in my own mind. But then I realized, like, waking up every morning wanting to end your life, going to bed every night wanting to just not wake up because you know you're going to have to go through a fucking, like, jungle gym obstacle course the next day just to get your mind right enough to function. Like, it all of a sudden dawned on me that, like, damn, like, there has to be another way to live. And I just so happened to be, like, removed from my source for long enough in Texas to, like, really feel that and then call people and ask for help. So the three-quarter house I went to the first time took me back in and said, you know, we need you to get detoxed again. And I was like, I can't lose this job. Trust me. I want this. Let me in. So I had 2 days sober, and that was the last time that I ever drank. And so I lived in a three-quarter house, walking out every morning in a suit to go to Buckhead and work an insurance job. All of my my roommates called me the... what's his name? Patrick from American Psycho. Because they were all just, you know, fucking off. And I was, like, walking out in a suit and shit and then, like, coming in to do, like, a check-in at a rehab. And it was just funny because, like, I all of a sudden, like, felt a part of. I all of a sudden felt none of the differences I had noticed the first time and all of the similarities, which was just I'm another fucked-up person, bozo on the bus, and, like, clearly from my track record, don't know how to get sober. So, how did I get sober? God. Really? I worked the first step with a sponsor who had 8 months at the time, who's still my sponsor today. And he was saying some really, like, fiery shit that was getting me pumped up. And I was like, all right, I'm going to ask this guy to take me through it. And so he cracked my shit wide open. He was like, we're going to do this in like 3 months. You down? I was like, yes. And so what I would do is work from like 8:30 until 5:30. Then I would go and do my check-in at rehab. And then I would go to a meeting. And then I would meet him and just aggressively get the steps done. And then go to bed at about midnight, wake up again, and do it all over again. When I was at work, I had people questioning my work ethic because I was only staying until 5:30. When I was at rehab, I was having people question my tardiness because I must have been going out and getting high. When I was with Brandon, you know, the meeting was only right there. That's my sponsor. The meeting's only right there. Like, why are you late? So around every step of the way, like, I was doing the best I could and just getting, like, popped and grilled and fucked up. And, like, finally, I just surrendered. And I would tell the people at work, hey, I'm doing the best I can. Tell the people at rehab, I'm doing the best I can. Tell my sponsor, I'm doing the best I can. And, like, accept the position that I was in, which was, like, I don't know how to manage my own life, and I need help. And so I went through the steps the first time in 3 months while I was at Safety Net. And then I moved in with this guy. And we lived in a little bungalow. We lived in a little bungalow near Little Five Points. And I was like 3 months sober at the time. And we had a hell of a ride together in that little place. And I remember one of my future roommates came over, and Davis locked him in the spare room and told him he couldn't come out until he had written the fourth step. And then we just kept him in there for hours, and then he came out and, like, promptly relapsed a couple weeks later. And so, like, we were on some, like, fire and brimstone crazy shit, and I was loving it. I mean, we were doing, like, we made a bucket list of shit to do sober, because, like, when you're used to living under the influence for so many years, nothing seems to come to life anymore. And so, like, we were just, you know, he was a year, I was 3 months sober, and we were really, like, feeding the bullshit in each other and just having a blast. And, like, looking back at it, like, that's exactly what I needed, because that was the start of a very intimate connection with another man where we could be completely ourselves without having to try to gauge, like, okay, is this person an obstacle or a resource or both, or how am I going to extract what I need out of them? Like, it was finally a relationship to where, like, we could come together as two human beings and be absolutely content with being vulnerable. That's really what has gotten me sober. Like, seeking out those people that I can have an uncomfortable conversation with and say, hey, you know what? Like, I'm really fucking afraid right now because I don't know what, you know, I don't know what's going on. I don't know how to stay sober. I feel like I'm going crazy. Can you please help me? Having that, I've always been reciprocated with the same level of compassion and energy. And so I don't know why I was so afraid of ever doing that before in my life. I don't. And because of relationships like that with other men in here, because of just dumb luck and grace, and because of having just a very solid network of accountability where we are all down to clown, but when shit hits the fan, like, we have each other's backs and we call each other out on each other's shit. You know, the only friendship I had known before recovery was, it was just based on a mutual use, really. Like, no one really had my own interests in their heart. Like, we would just pool our resources or pool our deviance in order to accomplish a goal. But if you overdose, they're out the door. And I had to learn that the hard way. But I had never known a friendship in the level that I had known, like, once I came in this room. And my relationship with God, how that started was, I didn't really have much beef on God. My parents weren't making us go to church all the time. I really didn't care. I just thought he wanted nothing to do with me, or he was punishing me for my sinful ways. And so I just didn't consider God at any moment in my life before coming here. And so when I heard that was going to be necessary to do for the successful consummation of this thing, I didn't really care. It didn't offend me, but I didn't really think it would work. Just like, what's that going to do? Then I got linked in with some very, very dear friends of mine that I have until this day, to where we all came together on a mutual adventure and path to rigorously explore what makes us tick, why we do what we do, how can we target the piece of our minds that I was wanting to escape from for years before I even did drugs or drank alcohol. What can we do to combat this? The process of working the steps was the number one way that I found to combat it, because doing an inventory, getting connected with God, looking at people in the face and making them amends for like shit that I had done was the most humbling exercise that I've ever gone through. And I'll share one story of an amends. It was to my mother. I brought her out to Longhorn when I was like a year sober, and I was sitting down in front of her and I was like, "Mom, I did A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and all the way down the line." I was like, "How did that make you feel?" And this was like questions driven by my sponsor. And she was just like, "That I lost my firstborn son." And I was like trying my best to be robotic about it, because it was difficult to look this woman in the eye that had given me so much and like tell her all of the shit that I did, that some she didn't even know about and some she had an idea, but I was there to confirm her suspicions. And I was like, "What can I do to make this better?" She's a very creative woman. And so she was like, "I want you to go to every pawn shop that you sold my jewelry at and take this list of shit that I have missing that I've made," assuming that it was either you or your drug addict step cousin, "and I want you to ask them if they have it and if you can buy it back." I was like, "Fuck." I was like, "Can I just, you know, be better from now on?" You know? And nope, but I walked my happy ass into several pawn shops and knew the reaction I was going to get, because this was from years prior. I was like, "Hey, do you have it? It's been melted down since blah, blah, blah day. Thank you." But having to look all these people in the eye that had been like fucking a helpless drug addict out of money for their mother's shit was very humbling. And I did that several times, and I reported back to her, "Sorry, didn't find anything." She was like, "I know." And just smiled. And she was like, "How was the experience?" It's like, it tickled, you know, it tickled right there. And then we both just started crying and hugged each other. And it was a pretty beautiful thing. But it's shit like that, that like, without these steps and without a road being cut by the people that started this thing, I would have been very lost. You know, it started without a big book. It started without steps. It started with two men, like Davis was saying, like meeting in a kitchen, or two women meeting in a kitchen, meeting in a church, meeting in a forum, and coming together and bearing their souls in a way that they were not used to and that they had not experienced, but that they could present themselves to each other in a way that they could mutually heal through the power of something greater than themselves. And so what that's looked like for me is for about, 2 or 3 years now, I've been praying and meditating on a daily basis before I go into work every single morning, before I go to sleep every single night, even if it's as simple as just laying with my eyes closed and saying a few words, or if it's as complicated as, you know, doing a handstand with prayer beads and yoga shit. Like, I've done just about everything in sobriety to try to find God, but really, like, what I've learned is it just does not matter. Like, what matters is that my heart is turned outside of myself. And I've definitely gone through cycles over the years in terms of varying degrees of selfishness, but I feel like those practices and continuing to revisit some form of inventory, some form of amends making, some form of cleaning the street along the way when I fuck it up, which I definitely have several times in sobriety. And just realizing that, like, especially the people in here, like, the world has different ways of seeing things, has ways of understanding things, but like, people in here viscerally understand what it's like to feel like fucking needles are coming out of every pore of your skin. You're so uncomfortable before you have a conversation. And then invariably what I found in my experience is, like, once I read my inventory to my sponsor, or once I went into those pawn shops, or once I looked a friend in the eye and said, like, "Yo, I'm really getting my ass kicked, and like I need your support and I need your help. That shit is relieved. It's just relieved. And like running from those conversations like I did for so many years, like my number one fear was being exposed when I was using. Being exposed, you know, being caught in my web of deceit that I had woven for everyone in my life. And like when that finally happened in my dad's car and he was like, if there's a little king operating you, let me get him. God, that shit was relieving. It was fucking terrifying, but like it was relieving. And so like what I found being sober is that like I'm always going to be taking my will back. I'm always going to be acting out in some form or fashion. And like that's okay. You know what I mean? Like it's fine if I'm aware of it, if I'm seeking help for it, if I'm, you know, faith without works is dead, if I'm taking steps to be a better person, to clean up the remnants of my past, and to, you know, for me, in my experience, try to target some of the deeper levels, and I've, you know, sought outside help for this, some of the deeper levels of my psyche that were kind of driving me into this in the first place. And so what have I found through doing this? I have found that everything that I used or drank for, I've been given. I used and drank to be able to stand in front of a podium and teach kids accounting at UGA. There's no way I would do that shit sober. And like, here I am. You know what I mean? Like, I used and drank to feel confident with women because I was fucking terrified of them for a long time. And so, you know, now it's been given. Like, I used and drank to get rid of the just cyclical, non-stop noise in my head that was having me constantly being uncomfortable in my own skin, and it stopped. It stopped. Like, I've been through some shit lately, but it's like, it's been years since I haven't gone to sleep within about 10 minutes of my head hitting the pillow. That shit didn't happen for a long time. Even before the runaway train of drugs and alcohol. And so, like, if there's anything that I can emphasize about, like, how I've been able to stay sober is, like, sincerely seeking God and sincerely seeking help from people and opening myself up and being very vulnerable with what's going on inside of me, no matter how sober I am, no matter what my life looks like, no matter how much people look up to me or think that I have my shit together. Because, like, at the end of the day, we're all human. We all struggle. We all have this shit going on. And, like, some days are better than others in sobriety. But the most beautiful gift of it is that when I would feel that way and use, I wouldn't get to live. I wouldn't get to experience just something, a dot on the spectrum of life. Like, I was fixated on wanting to stay right here, you know, having to have the right chemical, the right music, the right girl, the right car, the right job, and like, lo and behold, it was never enough. Go figure. What this program has allowed me to do is to take more of a sense of curiosity towards my life instead of a sense of fear about experiencing something new, you know? I remember bawling my eyes out like a little baby for many firsts that I've had in sobriety. I was just like, where the fuck is this coming from? Like, you know, what is going on with me? And like, and that's okay. The biggest gift of this program is being able to live, being able to experience life as it comes and not have to escape, not have to run, not have to fear it, but to be able to say to someone, hey, I'm really fucked up right here, right now. And like, it would mean a lot if you would go and get some coffee with me, you know, or it would mean a lot if you'd come over and shoot some shit, play some video games or spades or it, you know, anything to get out of myself and like help people. Like, I have found so much pleasure in helping people in any form, whether it's AA, whether it's work, whether it's anything, you know, and it's just, it makes life a lot more full. I would not trade this for the world, and no matter how much I've fallen my face in this program, like, goddamn, it's a better way of living. You know, I really have found that, and like the strength of my connection with my peers and my higher power and in speaking to the shit, now it's crazy. Like, my friends and I are so close that, like, if one of us has some shit on our face and can't see it, they instantly pop it and we can laugh. You know what I mean? Instead of, for like years, I would feel like I was in that fog and I would feel blurry and fucked up and just exist that way, not knowing another possibility. And so, like, if there's one thing I could emphasize, it's just give it a shot. You know, it's been a blessing for me, and I appreciate you guys listening, and if no one has told you that they love you today, I love you. Thanks.